Well, good evening, brothers. This is Mike Clevenger. Welcome to the Masons Lead Better Master Builder call for November of 2015. As I announced last week, this is we've been doing this for a year now, and those who are participating is I know are having a wonderful time listening to the recordings and participating in our conference every month. As I said, we probably have on the average of about 100 downloads from the website. So I welcome those who are live on the call tonight, as well as welcome those who are listening at a later date. We appreciate your interest. And this, of course, is all for the purpose of improving ourselves as Masons, becoming better leaders, and discussing things that will improve not only ourselves, but the fraternity. So, again, I just, I'm glad that there is interest in doing that. Well, with that, I wanted to just tell you how excited I am about the topic this evening. As leaders, part of a leader's job is to look to the future, provide a vision, and think about, in the terms, especially a Masonic leader, what is going to improve the craft? What is going to make a better experience so that we can better engage our lodge members? Those who have been in the Masons Lead Better Workshop, now we talk about engagement, and that if you are not connecting as well as communicating with your lodge members, as well as if you do and they show up and you're not providing a good experience for them or not giving them what they're there to find, your lodge participation will suffer. So tonight we're going to talk about something that has caught on in the United States over the last five or more years. And we're going to talk about a traditional observance lodge. And the way we're going to do that, I think, is just really cool. We are going to have a special guest, as announced, Brother Bill Cochran, who I'll introduce here in just a minute. And he is involved in creating a brand new traditional observance lodge in the 18th district here in Ohio. So I think it's a great topic. I'm excited to learn more about traditional observance lodges. And so, Brother Bill, welcome this evening. How you doing?
Well, good evening, worshipful brother. I'm doing fine. I think two of our call-ins I know quite well. And how are you today?
Hey, I'm good. Yeah, we got a little intimate, intelligent group here this evening. So, so anyway, and the other guys on the call, I just want to let you know, I just unmuted you. So, anytime that you feel the need to ask me or Brother Bill a question or want to insert a comment, we'll just treat it like a conversation here this evening. As it always is among friends. So, Bill, to begin with, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, a short background of who you are and how you got involved in Masonry. Would you do that for
us? Well, absolutely, Mike. I don't know.
Go ahead.
Okay. I didn't know if you want personal background or professional
Just tell us what you feel like, you know? Tell us who you are so the brothers get to know you.
Okay, well, just a quick reference to my career. I'm a retired real estate appraiser, and I was retired for 2 months and opened up a bookstore actually the first of this year. So other than that, in regards to my Freemasonry and my Masonic experience, I was raised in 1988 in Zanesville, and I belong to the Lad Shrine Temple. I have a demit from the Scottish Rite Valley of Cambridge. I belong to the Amro Grotto here in Zanesville. And I attend Arts and Sciences 792 on a regular basis.
Well, that's cool. So you've been around the block. You've traveled a lot, right?
You could say that. In 27 years, I've seen a lot of Masonic travels, absolutely.
So what prompted you to join Masonry? Is it a person, or what got you to turn in a petition?
Well, I'm not a next generation Mason, so my knowledge of Freemasonry came from friends, and especially my neighbor, who's now deceased for many years, and then my former neighbor, and a former pastor, which he first lined, and my neighbor second lined my petition. That was my knowledge and background of Freemasonry, and as a kid growing up, always wondered what those funny symbols were with that big letter G on the back of his car meant. So that's where my background in Freemasonry comes from.
So a connection to people you knew?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Well, let's dive right into this. Why don't you tell us a little bit about how did you learn about a traditional observance lodge? And then tell us, for those maybe listening who don't even know what that is, tell us what that is.
Well, my first experience and any knowledge I ever gained was at last year, 2015, at the Masonic Restoration Foundation conference in Cincinnati. One of the host lodges was Arts and Sciences 792. And they opened and closed a lodge at the conference. And that was the first time I'd ever seen anything like that in my life. And I just sit there in awe, almost the proverbial, my jaw hit the ground. That was my first experience. And I saw that, and I knew that there was something else out there. Of course, I had a lot of questions about it, but that was my first time I've ever seen that, and so that part, the rest is history in regards to my feelings and attitude towards traditional observance.
So tell us how is it different? What is the difference between just say going to a normal lodge meeting and going maybe to a traditional lodge meeting? How is it different?
We have to first focus on what's the same. Everything is the same. A lot of questions have arisen that have been asked to me about traditional observance. One of the big questions that I've addressed is, well, they must be doing illegal degree work, illegal craft, because they're definitely not following the Grand Lodge of Ohio ritual. Which is definitely not true. Everything is the same. I guess the best way I can describe it in just very short words is traditional observance puts on a better show than a Masonic lodge that's not traditional observance, i.e. you don't hear the long business meeting. That's one thing that is definitely not done. And just the ritual. It's more of a refined, to the point, and the meetings, they're more, there's more of immersion for the members to attend a traditional observance lodge meeting. Having said that, what that means, I would look at it is, candlelight, you have music, incense, things just to, stimulate your senses. It wake you up, you might say. And the other thing I've noticed too is that there's a degree of decorum that's respected at a traditional observance. For example, I've attended lodges where members have shown up in blue jeans, t-shirts, shorts, whatever. Where a traditional observance lodge, we respect the craft, or I should say they respect the craft. They respect their position in the lodge, their position as an officer, et cetera. So that means a lot to you. Plus the fellowship. There's normally arts and sciences, and there's always a festive table board dinner, coffee meal, as some call it, prior to the meeting. So you really get to know who these brothers are. You're sitting beside every meeting you attend. So that's been the things I've taken away from it. And my bottom line is, and it may sound, I don't want to make this frivolous, but I think traditional observance lodge puts on a better show than non-traditional observance lodges, if that makes any sense.
Well, I think it does. I've attended arts and sciences as well. From what you said and what the little bit I've experienced, it takes that lodge meeting and turns it into something special, I guess is my word for that. You said puts on a better show. I mean, if you think about why you go to lodge and how the ritual describes being in lodge, it's to separate you from your ordinary life for a short period of time. And I observed that the traditional observance lodge just prepared you by, like walking in silence and a period. I know that some have a period of contemplation before the meeting starts and after the meeting. Before the meeting concludes, I have a good friend, Mason in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, whose traditional observance lodge it is quite formal. You have to be invited to join. They wear tails. It's a very expensive proposition. May take you 3 years to get through the degrees because of the focus on education. So anyway, I guess there's a big wide range of what you can do with a traditional observance lodge?
Yeah, absolutely, Mike. And I think you touched on a point about the education. And that's another difference that I've seen with traditional observance and experienced is you actually go to lodge and you learn about the craft and you learn about why you're there. You learn about ritual. You learn about degree. You're just not learning, memorizing charges and lectures and things like that. Or you're actually having lessons. It's not your normal LEO minute where they just read something and you're not really sure if they even knew what they were reading. But in the sense of a traditional observance, you go and you learn. And that's been one of the elements, the key elements of these younger men that are members of Lodge or are considering joining, is they don't want an experience where you just connect the dots. They want to learn about things, and that's been one of the real big factors in these brothers that want to start the traditional observance lodge. They really want to learn and really want to learn right, and take something from their lodge experience that they've learned at these meetings.
Yeah, I've talked to younger. I too was at the Masonic Restoration Conference that you spoke of, and just had a lot of great conversations with all ages of Masons, but particularly recall the younger Masons who were really in the fraternity to take what the words in the ritual presents to us and using them to do what we are asked to as Masons to improve ourselves. And so that part of it to me and to these younger men I talked to was very, it's just really exciting. So having seen that, seen and participated in arts and sciences, what motivated you to say, you know what, I want to start one of these? What kind of bug got into you?
what kind of bug. I think it's contagious, which is a good thing. Well, what Arts and Sciences has always is their prior to their meetings is their festive table board dinner, and that's really where the root of Arts and Sciences began at the Goose and Gridiron Club. Just having a meeting and, you know, sharing fellowship and brotherhood, whether it was with a Freemason or not. And then they discuss, you know, Masonic topics. And so what we did was we started a group here in Zanesville called the Brothers Night Out Group, which we're on Facebook as well.
Yeah,
and every month we have a dinner at one of the local restaurants. And they're invited, you know, Freemasons and non-members are welcome equally. And we have, you know, we do things like, you know, we do some singing, we make toasts. But most importantly, of course, we have the meal is the fellowship and brotherhood. And then we have a speaker. And it's always, right now, it's been so far a Masonic topic. For example, our meeting in December 3rd.
Sorry.
That's all right. It must be your crowd, your fans. Right Worshipful Brother Ken Cohen from the 14th Masonic District is going to speak on the topic of Judeo-Christian values and Freemasonry.
Oh, wow.
We've had topics of geometry, art, and Freemasonry. We have a local artist who's a past master that's very well-known, wonderful work he creates with the paintbrush. And he spoke on how the Freemasonry in regards to the angles and such and levels and plumb affects, you know, like this the 24-inch common gavel, how he applies those to how his pictures and paintings are going to look. As a matter of fact, he's going to be our first master of the new lodge. So it started from there. We've averaged 12 attendees every month. And so we've had a good time with that. The last dinner we had the first of this month, there were four attendees that are not members of the fraternity, and they are chomping at the bit to join the new lodge. So that's where this started. And as the other brothers that haven't attended all of them or off and on or just haven't attended any of them, have approached me and say, you know what, that's a great idea. I had one brother say, that's the greatest thing that happened to the 18th district in years. So that's his opinion. What's important is we started something, just like Arts and Sciences, we're not topping, but sometimes that's the best form of flattery. And that started the conversation of, well, let's take this another step. You know, we're doing this once a month already. Why don't we just start talking about a new lodge and see what's going to happen, see if it works. And as of right now, it seems to be at least working in the sense of, you know, brothers ready to start the lodge. So that's where it started, just simple dinners every month.
And enjoying each other's company and exploring educational topics and said, gee, why don't we make a lodge out of this?
Absolutely, and a couple speakers that are coming up first of the year will be Jason Eddy from Monroe Lodge and down around Cincinnati and Dayton areas, who's a Masonic poet, and he's going to present some of his work and do a presentation, and then Right Worshipful Brother Dan Rinko is going to come to one of our, probably one of our dinners and discuss his book. And possibly come to one of our organizational meetings for our new lodge as well to help us, you know, get this on the right course.
Yeah, yeah. So you're getting support. You're getting support for it sounds like for what your dream is for this lodge. I remember. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say one thing that I've definitely, you know, I kind of was the catalyst, but, somebody wants to point fingers as being the ringleader, I'll take that responsibility too. But one thing, when we've taken the eye out of the formation of this lodge, And it's a wee lodge. You know, everybody that's been involved in the creating this, everybody from now until the day the lodge is formed, until definitely after, will be part of our bylaws, everybody has an equal opinion and say in how this lodge works. And that's one of the big things I've seen with traditional observance, as well as many lodges, which do the opposite. They don't understand that everybody has an equal opinion, and it should be, you know, should be appreciated and respected. So all the ideas that are being, you know, kicked around and informing the lodge, it's everybody. So I always want to make that clear, because I don't want to look like I'm being selfish or being the righteous person of creating this lodge. So a little, just a little caveat there, you might say.
Well, that's all right. No, I understand. I had a thought here, and it just kind of shot right out of my head. Oh, I know what it was. I remember it's been 5-6 years ago that in my lodge we had spent some time discussing what was important to us as a lodge, what kind of activities we wanted to see from the lodge brothers. And I remember one night, as a part of that, we handed out an index card to everyone that attended lodge meeting and asked them what could we have done to make this lodge meeting more meaningful to you. And I always remember this one brother who I read his card, and he says, "Challenge me mentally. Bring a philosopher to lodge. Bring something that makes me think about what this ritual means," and it stuck in my head, and so what the traditional lodge concept does is that, right? Makes you think about different topics.
Absolutely, and you know, that's one thing the big thing I noticed about traditional observance, and I had one of our future chaplain, who's interested in being chaplain of the new lodge, is made it a point. He said, "I don't want to learn about," I'll paraphrase because I can't quote him exactly, but he said, "I don't really want to know about the sauerkraut dinner at the lodge in Toledo. I can post, they can post that on the bulletin board. I don't go to lodge to learn about that. I go to lodge to learn about the craft and the teachings." And he said, "I don't get stimulated from learning, hearing about the last topic of minutes, and et cetera, et cetera." And you're absolutely right. So in regards to his statement about different events, well, that's not really learning. That's being, you know, made aware of events. But to really learn, that's what the TO Lodge is about, where people are wanting that. They're desperately wanting it.
Let me ask you a question, and you know, the other guys on the call, if you've got a comment about any of this as well, jump right in at any time. But I guess my thought is here, Bill, that this kind of why there are brothers who don't understand this. We have built a concept of how a lodge operates here in Ohio. And it's that open the meeting, you know, and here's the agenda, and we're going to read the minutes previous meeting, blah, 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 blah. And oh, by the way, we're required to have an education program. And so education is sort of an afterthought. So a traditional observance lodge kind of goes against that format we've been using forever. And doesn't it flip that around and say, look, we're going to have a meal. We're going to practice brotherly love. We're going to enjoy each other's company, get to know each other. Then we're going to get real serious, and we're going to go into a lodge room and think about our lives and think about how Masonry can help us. And, oh, by the way, the business, we got that taken care of in committee, and here we go. Don't we flip what we're used to on its head, right?
Well, you're absolutely right, Mike, and I think that goes to the matter of out of a comfort zone.
That's a good way to say it.
Or any company or family group or whatever. Anytime you make a change, it can create discomfort. It can create the question will come up of what are they up to or why do we have to change? It's worked this way for 100 years. And I think that's probably going back to the question that's I've been asked and other brothers have been asked about the new lodge is, well, they've got to be going against the ritual Grand Lodge. You know, they're definitely breaking the laws. And it's because of that change they're afraid. And I understand. I appreciate that.
And that's one of the things change, you know, people who don't know, they are fearful of that change because of they just don't know what's going to happen.
Right. And I think the biggest frustration for myself, and I know I can speak for other brothers that's involved in the new lodge, I'll speak for myself, is the frustration I've had of extending my hand out to say, please, let's attend an Arts and Sciences Lodge. Please, you know, be my guest at this lodge. I'll drive you up. Let's just see what it's about so you'll know that all your concerns that there's not voodoo being practiced in a lodge room, that what this is. So, you know, to try to address their fears and see what this is about. And that's been my frustration because I've extended that opportunity, that invitation out many times. And the people that are the brothers that have opposed this or questioned it or felt uncomfortable about change in a traditional observance lodge haven't been willing to accept that invitation. So I that's been my frustration in the sense that, you know, once somebody sees what this, you know, quote unquote change is, they'll understand that, you know, Arts and Sciences really isn't any different than any other lodge. They're doing everything the same.
That's
but
correct.
It goes back, they're doing a better show. They have a better program. And that's the only difference. Brothers are the same. Nobody's any different. Nobody's any better or less because they belong to a TO lodge versus a non. It's just the fact that if you just take the time to learn about it, again, it goes back to education. You know, they'll see that it is a good thing.
Well, I know that when Arts and Sciences began the process of going from the Goose and Gridiron Club to a chartered lodge here in Ohio, there were all of these same things you're experiencing. Oh, my goodness, you know, what are they doing? How can they do that? And, oh, they'll take members away from our lodges. Well, I don't know who it was. I don't think it was anyone here, but our Masonic scholars said, well, if they do take members away from your lodge, doesn't that tell you something? That maybe they're doing something different and better than you are? But I know that there was those same kinds of feelings here in the 14th District when Arts and Sciences began seeking a charter to become a lodge.
Yeah.
And Bill, aren't most of Arts and Sciences members of other lodges as well?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's been one of the things about the creating of the new lodge. And on the Facebook book group page, we've made it very clear, and when I say we, again, I'm not speaking for myself, that we're not out to, you know, recruit members from other lodges, take them away from their lodge, demit, and join a new lodge. You know, if they want to, we definitely will support plural membership. But we're not out to take from any lodge. And I think lodges, you know, because of that thought, are afraid that, okay, we're trying to steal all your members and putting them on our side, on our team. And that is not a goal, and that is not ever going to be even happening. That's one thing, I haven't heard this, but it would be a good presumption to think that there's probably a lot of lodges, at least to say the 18th district where I am, are probably concerned that we're out to recruit and take away from their lodge, and we're not. But, you know, we encourage plural membership, or, you know, obviously we don't recruit, but if somebody wants to join the lodge, definitely we're going to, be more than happy to accept them as members. But, I think that's just part of the fear, you know, that we're trying to take something from somebody else, and we're not.
Well, and we I'm sure we can be honest, and I'm sure I think you'll agree with this, that this type of lodge may not be suited for certain brothers, right? They may be happy in an active lodge that is centered around, you know, picnics and dinners and just having a good time. So there's a certain, I guess what I'm saying, there's a certain type of brother that wouldn't even be attracted to this kind of lodge. Is that a fair statement?
That's a very fair statement, and the founding members of this new lodge, we respect that, and you know, we'd be foolish to think that every member of every lodge, and regardless of where it's located, it's part that would is going to want to do this. And no, we don't want that. We don't have that mindset that other. We would hope, and you know, we're just an option. And I will say that when I spoke to our district advisor, one of the caveats when the Most Worshipful Master Real gave his approval and blessing to start the formation of this new lodge, was his caveat is that he expects us to be the lodge in the 18th district where other lodges will come and see what we do and take back and share that, you know, those experiences with their lodge, and hopefully maybe there's something will be done in a TO lodge, for example, in our lodge, that just one thing that we do that they could take back to their lodge and share it and put it in, you know, put it to good use there. So
right,
I guess, yeah. And so having said that with the caveat, you know, so we know that we're a lodge of education, of teaching, where we encourage other lodges to come and just see what we do. And if you see something you like, hey, we'll help you all the way to do it, implement it in your lodge. But I think that goes back to the fear that, you know, I think a lot of people think, oh, they just want to, you know, close all the other lodges down and take them all over and, you know, just kind of, you know, run the gauntlet through the 18th district and just push all the other lodges out of the way and show no respect to what they're doing because it's working for them.
Yeah.
So we're not, that's one of our real points of this new lodge, Mike, is, you know, we're not expecting all the other members of other lodges or other lodges to do what we're doing. We're just offering an option.
Yeah.
Bill, let me ask a question.
Go ahead, Bill.
Now, Bill, you've been to Arts and Sciences Lodge. And
yes, sir.
And I have been there. In fact, I was their deputy last year.
Mm-hmm.
And so I understand what they're doing. I've been to some of their events. Has there ever been, and I don't know if this would be the proper thing to do without acting like you're trying to, as the conversation just talked about, taking members from other lodges, but an opportunity, has Arts and Sciences ever sent out a district-wide invitation to the other lodges to say, come and visit, see what we do things a little different, glean some ideas, take them back to your lodge, that sort of thing? Has that ever been thought of?
Well, right, Worshipful, I can't speak for, maybe Worshipful Brother Dave can, I can't speak for Arts and Sciences since they're in an entirely different district. So maybe one of the members of that lodge could answer that for you.
If I could pipe in here a second here.
Sure, go.
Right, Worshipful, let me just mention that they do that, but they do that electronically, mostly on Facebook and sometimes with emails, and sometimes they post it on their own website. But Mm-hmm. They don't do it with, you know, with written correspondence. I've seen, for example, last year, they did wide circulation of an event where they brought Keith Smigel from Hiram to bring mm-hmm. his magic lantern. Yeah. You're familiar with the old style projector that has a carbon has a carbon light carbon source of carbon mm-hmm. light source. It is as loud as can be, and this thing is the 1900s vintage.
Yeah.
And it also had the original glass slides that were used into this machine to show them on the, what was part of the lecture series that they used mm-hmm. back. And I think there was a story about those kinds of devices in the Scottish Rite magazine just last month.
Yeah, but right, I saw that,
These things are antiques, and this has been updated so that it actually can work on a regular electricity, and mm-hmm. it's really a fascinating thing to watch, and especially to look at the quality of these. And that was broadcast. I think we had over 65 people there.
Hmm.
They had so many people, they had to bring extra chairs in so that they could sit in that little Avery room to watch that event, and it was and we were there for quite a while watching that, and that was well publicized. It was probably I'd say 3 months in advance, and they were asking as many people as possible. We had them from Canton, we had a bunch of them from Piketon, we had people from all over the state come to that thing. It was really quite an event. So, they have done it. And during that period, they did the same opening that they always use where they file into the lodge room when the lodge room is mm-hmm. dark. Mm-hmm. And then the master brings the light. The master brings the light into the lodge room while the rest of the room is dark, and then he lays the candle at the junior warden station, and then the senior deacon lights the candles in the appropriate way, and he does it, very traditionally, lighting the candles from east to west, just like the sun goes across the sky.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And it's all the symbolism and things that go on, of course they're very, always dressed up, and they're always the master always wears his cover except when he's engaged in prayer or doing an obligation. I mean, they're very careful about that, and they do all that. They did all that for us, of course, and then we had we actually did a Master Mason that night, I believe, and then they did the lecture with Keith presenting this machine, which was fascinating, and I think we talked about it for weeks afterwards, forth.
There's been a lot of talk about drops in membership and how are we going to get our members back and so forth and so on. And I was talking with somebody about it the other night, and I said, I think that a lot of our membership is a symptom of a bigger problem. And if everything's right, the members will be there. And I think some of what they're doing there at Arts and Sciences, they're getting back to the traditional, a little more pomp, a little more ceremony, and like you guys have said so far this evening, more of the education aspect of it. I think we've lost, we've gotten sloppy in our lodges, and we've lost in our work. I mean, I was at a lodge the other night, and they were doing degree work. They put a lecture on the floor, and I sat there and I thought, if the candidate even has an inkling of what this guy is talking about when he leaves here tonight, it'll be a miracle.
Yeah, I think I was at that meeting. I think I was at that meeting.
Well,
it was. It was sad. It really was.
It was.
It wasn't crisp. It wasn't. It wasn't the. It was too much prompting. It was too much looking at each other for. The guy just didn't know it, and the guys and that were involved just didn't know it. And you're right, it suffered.
And I think we've lost touch with some of our degree work and the promptness of it, the Christmas. You know, somebody asked me, why did you become an officer? And I can tell you, on the night I took my fellow craft degree, he's now past master of our lodge, but a brother, Bill Schwartz, presented the fellow craft lecture with such style and such eloquence and such meaning that as a candidate, I stood there that night on that carpet and I said, I'm going to learn to do that.
Yep.
I was thoroughly impressed by what this guy was doing.
Well, right. And, if I may, I'm sorry.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was just going to interject, right, Worshipful, is I think that goes back to who has the best show.
Yeah.
You know, if you go to a play and the actors aren't prepared or they're being prompted from the side to the stage and it's not fluid, you know, that you're not going to want to pay good money to see that show. You're going to want to leave.
Yeah, and you're certainly not going to recommend it to your friends.
No. So I think what you're referring to, I really think that goes back to who has the best show.
Yeah, and I think it goes back to some of the traditions, and I think lodges like what you're talking about and arts and sciences, they're trying to go back to some of the traditional things. I think probably what lodges were like way back when they were formed. And the education aspects of it. I have been installing officers, and if you sit down and read the installation ceremony of the officers, there is some powerful stuff there. I mean, it's just some amazing work, and that ties in scripturally, and people need to hear it. They need to listen to it again. And we're not doing that sort of thing. And we're not being professional. I think I've seen people sit in lodge with jeans on, you know, and somebody said, well, if a guy comes from work, I said, hey, if a guy comes from work, when I was potentate or going through the van line at the Aladdin, I worked in Newark on locomotives during the day. And we had a visitation, and I brought my clothes with me and was able to shower at the temple and change. Now, a guy can put a shirt and tie in the car and take it with him, but when he gets to the lodge, he can change. And I think we're losing some of that. And some people show up to lodge, and they look like they've been working in the garden all day or something.
Yeah, you're right.
I don't think it's right.
Yeah,
but
and
I think we've lost the professionalism. We're supposed to be a cut above, something a little bit better than the other organizations. And so anyway, that's some. And I think Mike, you and I talked a little bit about the other night at the Kabiri meeting.
We did, Bill.
And I'm going to address it some at the past masters convocation coming up.
Well, as Bill and I talked the other night, and as we talk about a traditional observance lodge, I pulled out Andrew Hammer's book, and, you know, this is, he talks about being observant, and we mentioned earlier that a traditional observance lodge can go adopt certain parts of a full-blown traditional observance lodge. I mentioned my friend's lodge in Louisiana, where it's very, very, very formal and very strict in its operation. But, you know, we're talking about some of the things that Andrew Hammer talks about. One of them is, we just talked to Bill, just Brother Estelle brought up, is dress. Recognizing the importance of what we do enough to dress properly. Recognizing that the words in the ritual book are important and meaning has to be conveyed. And just to memorize the ritual is not enough.
Right.
Andrew Hammer talks about in he talks about the pursuit of excellence. And so I back to what we were talking about, a different experience. You know, that's what's going to draw me out in the evening is and not want to miss it. If I'm going to be able to go and have an experience I can't have anywhere else in an organization, I'm going to be there every time that experience is put on.
Mm-hmm.
And we've lost that. We've made it so common that it sometimes it's just like going to any other service club meeting, and
yeah.
That's not exciting.
The other sad part that I noticed, too, is when, and I've noticed this in my own lodge, but when a candidate comes in to take the degree work, there's nobody on the sidelines. Where are the rest of the members? Aren't we excited, or shouldn't we be excited enough to want to come out and see a new man come through the program? I mean, and it's not happening, and I don't know.
Well,
I'm sorry.
No, jump in, whenever.
I was just going to say that getting back to Right Worshipful comments about, you know, proper dress and the respect for the lodge and the decorum is one of the things we do at the Brothers Night Out dinners is we have somewhat, it's fairly loose, but we still have a dress code. And the reason is besides the fact of just the respect and, you know, dressing up and et cetera, our goal is that somebody at the next table sees 14 guys, 12 guys or whatever, you know, making toast, singing or discussing Masonic topics or whatever, they're going to want to know, who are those guys? Well, who is this table? Who is this bunch of guys all dressed up? Who are they? And you know, those are Freemasons. And I think that image that we project, whether it be out in public, is even more important within our, you know, within that lodge, in the lodge room. The reason, again, why so many people have come to me, brothers have come to me about forming the new lodge is, you know, it's, again, it goes back to the sidelines. Why? It goes back to the show. Oh, we only have 7 people in the theater tonight. Well, you're not going to go to that show. But if you have a full house, that must be a pretty darn good show to watch.
And in our ceremony of installation, it says in there that the things that you learn in lodge, you're to take them out into the community and show the community. I talked about dress code one time to somebody, and they said, well, you know, it's the internal qualifications, not the external. And I said, that's true, but I said, if you have the internal, it's going to show externally.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's like faith without works is dead. And they go hand in hand.
Yeah.
And I think we've lost a lot of stuff. I think we've lost some of that. We need to get back to some of the things that we had when our lodges were founded. People dressed the part. They looked the part. They acted the part. If you're going to talk the talk, walk the walk, and that sort of thing.
If I could just to make a comment in here, we all have to lead by example.
Yeah.
And I think that the what you're talking about has to also start at the top. The master has to be committed. All of his officers have to be committed.
Mm-hmm.
And then that also means that they have to show up. If you're starting to put pro tems in, for 3 mm-hmm. or 4 pro tems in a degree night, you know, you're not getting the commitment from your officer. Right. So, what we're talking about a little bit here is trying to get all of the lodges, whether they call themselves observant lodges or not, to be more observant and
good comment, Dave.
And hopefully these new lodges that are coming out there, they're showing us how, you know, to when you start from the ground up. And, you know, they're really not starting from the ground up. And that's the point, I think, that that Bill is making. When you start a new lodge, all your guys have to be members of a lodge.
Right.
All your new lodges,
right.
And the same thing with, they all have to start out as members from. So what all they're doing is trying a new experience. They're still Masons. They still practice. They still do the same ritual, but they're doing it better for themselves. And so, and then of course it was interesting at the installation that I was at for Arts and Sciences. Bill was there too. Bill Cochran. They referred to the guys that had been raised by that or had become members through Arts and Sciences as sons of Arts and Sciences. So they mm-hmm. were their children. They referred to
right.
them as their,
mm-hmm.
their sons, their children.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, and they have 15 sons. In 5 years, they've raised and have 15 new members of Arts and Sciences.
Mm-hmm.
And they are quickly starting to fill in all the spots. I mean,
yeah.
the new master is still from another lodge, but the probably in two years, they'll have their master
mm-hmm.
will be have actually gone through Arts and Sciences. So, my point is that we need to take what these guys, the new lodges are trying, and try to get it back in our lodges. Try to get that back in. To our older lodges, where the tradition has fell down a little bit, where the participation has not been up to snuff, and we're not getting as sharp and committed as we should be. And I think we all agree. Would you, Bill, that it has to start at the top? The guy at the top has to be committed to do that.
Right.
And he has
mm-hmm.
to do it at every meeting. And he can't slack off, and he's got to be the one dressed up. He's got to be the one coming in looking like he's ready to go and motivate these everybody. Because if they're looking to the master and he's got the boots on and he's not, you know, dressed right and he doesn't have a tie on, and what are they going to think? Okay, so why should I do it?
And not only that, I think, is if it starts with the master, but it starts with the officers of the lodge. And if they're going to be an officer, then they need to make a commitment that, yes, I will learn the work. And I go back to, and somebody said, well, it's a volunteer organization. Well, I go back to what Kochenour said last year, and he said, yeah, it's a volunteer organization, but as soon as you volunteer, you just accepted a commitment to do the job. And I want to address that a little bit at the convocation as well, coming up in December. The officers need to get back into a routine of learning what it is they need to know. And when you ask a fella to be an officer of the lodge, ask him if he's willing to make the commitment. If he's not willing to make the commitment, then are you doing your lodge any favor? And I think the answer is no.
Right.
Well,
and the officers have to encourage the master, too. I mean, you're right.
That's right.
All the officers have to be committed, and the officers have to encourage the master to stay on top of this and keep pushing
mm-hmm.
in that observant perspective, so that the degree work gets crisper, the message gets better, the attendance gets higher. I mean, all those
mm-hmm.
things have to be focused. And again, I get it sometimes. Well, you know, that's not your job. I hear that all the time. Well, that's not your job. Why? You know, that's not your job. I'm just right now putting together a spreadsheet for tracking inspections, because one of the concerns we had was we're not getting enough people out to go to inspections. So I
mm-hmm.
thought I'd put together a little assignment. They said, well, that's not your job. You're the treasurer. That's not your we can't be living with that crap.
No,
we got to be
–
everybody has to be working together on this.
Mm-hmm.
If something's
mm-hmm.
not getting done, somebody has to step mm-hmm. up and say, look, this needs to get done, guys. This has
mm-hmm.
to get done.
Yeah.
So let's not worry about
Something that I've seen in too many lodges is that one of the number one qualifications on a resume to become an officer in a lodge, regardless of the station, is, do you know ritual? Can you remember lease? Can you remember the charge? Can you remember this? And, yeah, I have all respect for people that can remember that. It's a lot to learn. But there's more to leadership than just memorizing, you know, a script.
Yeah,
you know, there's a lot more to that. And I have seen where, you know, the officers, maybe they weren't qualified at the moment. That doesn't mean they wouldn't be qualified in the future because they just weren't quite ready. But they knew ritual. That makes you an officer.
Yeah. The other thing, I've talked to lodges, too, concerning ritual and learning ritual, and I know it's difficult to learn a lecture, and I know particularly the Entered Apprentice lecture is a long thing. But, you know, there's three lectures there in one. You can get three guys to learn the thing. One guy give one part, the next guy give the second part, the next guy give the third part. And then maybe the next year they trade parts. And in 3 years you could have three guys that know the whole thing. But I've said to lodges, put a lecture team together to take the pressure off of one guy.
Yeah.
And give more members of your lodge ownership of what's going on.
You're right. And that's a couple key points there is, you know, number one is, give them ownership of the lodge. I see too many lodges where there's just a few key owners, you might say, and everybody else is a subordinate. But really, if you're an officer, remember, everybody's the same. You know, nobody's any better than the rest. And the other thing, too, is getting other members, whether they're members or officers in the line, is to get them involved in learning the degree work. And like says certain part. I know several years ago there was a grandmaster in Ohio that required all the line officers, including appointed officers, to know a part of a ritual. Because I remember participating this in a lodge where all the officers had to say recite part of the know part of the ritual in that degree. So when it came to the lecture, every officer in that lodge, and this was all of Ohio, was giving a part of that lecture. But I've never seen that happen ever since. That doesn't mean it doesn't happen, but I personally have never seen that. But I remember that because I was part of that. I was an equal, and I might have been a steward. But the point is we've got to get the ownership back to all the members. Again, going back to our new lodge, it's every opinion, good or bad, is equal. Every member is equal.
All ranks are leveled.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, I'm glad you went, not to interrupt you, Bill, but we got about a minute left here, and so I wanted to pull us back to this. This has been great discussion because it's really parts of what you're trying to accomplish here with this traditional observance concept. And one of the thoughts that came through my mind as you guys were bringing all these excellent points up was the fact that, you know, how often we look back at some of our, you know, our previous Masons, Ben Franklin and George Washington, and we were quick to talk about them and proud of them as famous Masons, but we have a hard time going back and practicing Masonry like they did. And I keep asking the question, okay, 200 years from now, who are they going to look back and say, hey, he was a Mason? So,
yeah.
And so going back to pulling us back to the traditional observance concept, it's just something that gets us back to basics and some of the things we've been talking about. Bill, you're putting together in one package there and starting a new lodge. How can a brother get involved? Don't you have a meeting coming up? Let's announce that.
Yeah, thank you, Mike. If number one, we have a Facebook group. It's called A New Lodge, A New Beginning. Also, our Brothers Night Out has a group called Brothers Night Out, and our first organizational meeting will be December the 11th at 7 p.m. at the Walter Book Bookstore in Zanesville. And all are invited. We're going to have you're going to be there. We'll have representatives from the Grand Lodge. We have some district officers that are going to be out there also to help. You know, the TO guys will be explaining what TO's all traditional observance is about, plus the other other officers will be explaining, you know, what the process is and what all we have to do to start the formation of the new lodge. And all are welcome. We'd love to have everybody.
Bill, you mentioned the 11th. I have it on my calendar as the 10th, which is a Thursday. Is that an incorrect date?
I'm probably wrong, but let me check here real fast. I have so many dates in my head right now that okay. Let me look here. Bear with me.
That's event. The second Thursday.
You're right. It's December 10th. I stand corrected at 7 p.m. All the other specifics are the same.
Okay, and that meeting will be held where, Bill?
At the Walton Books Bookstore. The address is 3590 Maple Avenue in Zanesville. A good landmark. It's directly across the street from the main entrance to the Colony Square Mall.
Okay, great. Well, I really appreciate you accepting the invitation to come on and talk about this. It's a wonderful topic. It's a wonderful concept. I appreciate Brother Estelle and Brother Gubank on the call as well and their comments. A couple of references I jotted down for those listening at the recording want to know more.
Let me interrupt you just a moment.
Go
Guys,
ahead.
I got to get off the line because I got to go.
Okay, Bill.
So
thanks for
Mike,
being
I'll
here.
I'll touch base with you on when the next call is.
Okay,
thanks gentlemen.
Bill. Yeah, thanks, Right Worshipful.
Thank you.
Bye.
Others, see, it's you be comfortable around your brothers. You can tell them what's going on. Anyway,
right.
what I was going to say is there are some excellent references out there if you want to know more about traditional observance lodges. One of them is a book by Brother Cliff Porter, and it's called A Traditional Observance Lodge, One Mason's Journey to Fulfillment. You can go to Amazon.com and find that book. He has a Facebook page, Traditional Observance Lodge. You can certainly go to the Masonic Restoration Foundation website, and that's just MasonicRestorationFoundation.org. And there, I think it's under their documents section there. There are some discussions about a traditional observance lodge. Brother Cochran mentioned Sean Iyer, Freemasonry.org. You can go to that website and find some more information. He mentioned Right Worshipful Brother Hrinko's book. It's on the Masons Lead Better website. You can go there and get the information on how to buy that book as well. So it's been a...
If I may interject real quick, all the books you've referenced are available for sale at the Walls of Books in Zanesville also.
Well, I would expect nothing less.
Cheap plug.
Cheap one, brother. No, you know, it's funny. I'm looking forward to the meeting because, quick story, you know, if my wife and I are in a shopping mall, and we're walking down the middle, you know, the middle of the shopping mall, and she sees a bookstore. She doesn't ask anymore. She just turns in because she knows I'm going in.
She's my hero.
So I'm looking forward. I'm only going to bring one credit card, so I don't buy all your store out.
Hey, it's for sale.
Oh, no, come on. Well, Again, thanks for being here, Bill. Thanks, Brother Dave, for being on the call. And thanks to everyone who will listen to this recording. I will mention very quickly that, as I did last month, that we are busy yet this month scheduling the Masons Lead Better workshops for this Masonic year. Because of the nature of how we're doing this, we'll spend the whole month of, we're still finalizing some of the dates on the workshops. There'll be 12 of the Masons Lead Better workshop, which is now called Becoming Masonry. That's the first level of workshop. And the second one is called the Masonic Leaders Trestle Board. And that will only be held in 8 locations around the state. So, you know, the logistics of getting those scheduled has been a little more than it was last year. We are not having one in every district. We're trying to place them so they are close to you. So in December, we will open up on the website, Masons Lead Better website, the locations that are scheduled, and you can sign up for the workshop that fits your date and your location. If you want to drive from the northern part of the state down to the southern part of the state, you're welcome to it. So look for that on the website. Also, recently there is now a Twitter feed for Masons Lead Better. And just go to Twitter, type in Masons Lead Better, and it is at 365 a Mason. So every day there is a tweet with a reminder about your daily obligation as a Mason and a short little lesson there. So I invite you to be a part of that. If you are not a Twitter person, you can go to the website, masonsleadbetter.com, and the Twitter feed's on there and read them. You can also go to the website and register to get an email. We're now putting Masonic lessons on there, short blog posts with some Masonic lessons. You can sign up to receive those in your email inbox. Well, that's it for this evening. Brother Cochran, thanks again. Brother Gubank, thanks again for being here and being a participant.
Thank you,
and
sir.
Everyone, have a happy Thanksgiving.
Everybody, yes. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and happy Thanksgiving to everyone listening.
Thanks, Bill. Thanks, Dave, and good night.